שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוח, שלום לגויים, it's the evening of the second day, יוד גימל במל חשבן, פרשס וירא, תשעין וב, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 25 October 2015, webcasting from the promised land, the land promised to the Jewish people, which makes millions of other people very angry, bitterly resentful, and in the case of the Ishmaelites, homicidally so. Well, it was another normal day in the Promised Land, roughly a half a dozen or so attempts by the sons of Ishmael to murder the sons of Israel. About the same number as yesterday, I think. Actually, according to Israel Hayom's chart this morning, there were 9 incidents yesterday. Your usual normal kinds of stuff, attempts to stab Jews, cars on the road pelted with rocks. A flaming bottle of gasoline was thrown at a car with a mother and little girls, all of whom I think were burned by the flames. If not too seriously, thank God. But we all know from our own cooking accidents in the kitchen how painful even the slightest burn can be. So I guess it's a kind of initiation right there for this 4-year-old Jewess, the burn. The top story at the political level, if not the normal level, where Jews were being targeted for murder, the prime minister got John Kerry to go along with what is being portrayed, who knows the truth, as Abdullah of Jordan's idea of installing security cameras all over the Temple Mount. Well, that's fine with me. This might be the way to end the behavior of these Arab harpies, these women who shriek into Jewish faces who have just come to visit, call them names. The cameras should also pick up the Ishmael clones carrying cinder blocks and rocks and Molotov cocktails into Al-Aqsa Mosque. And I do mean Ishmael clones, they really are. It was the character of Ishmael in the Torah that led yours truly to believe, not just believe, but reason that the 5 books are divine. They are inhuman. They are superhuman. They're too good in terms of everything one expects from a book, from language. It's philosophy and ethics and psychology and poetry and the deepest wisdom about life. Animal anatomy. For decades, I had made myself an unfrocked Middle East expert by reading shelves of books on Arabi and Islam and terrorism, anthropology, cultural anthropology, history, linguistics, all of it worthwhile. But then I read a few verses in the Torah in which Ishmael plays a role, and then the analyses by the great commentators, and it became clear there was more truth and insight into the character of the Arabs here than all the books I'd read written by men with PhDs in some aspect of Middle Eastern studies. Yesterday in the Torah reading, we were introduced to Ishmael, and boy, are those verses as current and relevant as the latest news. In one of the weekend newspapers, one report cited the security forces reckoning that most of the violence these days is being perpetrated by these 16 and 17-year-olds in Jerusalem. They're the ones with no conscience, with no human empathy. They are functionally psychopathic personalities. And what also is true is the power they have to steer the ship of state, so to speak, the community of Arabs, the street Arabs, the Arab street. That's a term, street Arab, you find in the Oxford English Dictionary. In my own travels through Arab countries, I saw them everywhere. Young men, idle with nothing to do. And I've no doubt one cause of this excess of young males with nothing to do is the polygamy that is rife in Arabi. The Arabs have too many children to raise them properly, and certainly the economic forces are not enough to absorb them into the workforce. Osama bin Laden's father had children with 56 different women. These Arabs have too many kids that the society cannot absorb. It's also a culture of inbreeding, making a fetish of marrying one's closest cousins. They're a culture as well of widespread sodomy, which makes sense. They have this twisted attitude toward women and a twisted attitude toward young boys. And there is a connection between that bizarre relationship between the sexes and their sadism and cruelty. How different we Jews are in our insistence that one is a Jew via his mother, who infuses her Jewish children with her own milk of human kindness. how wrong the world is to think, as so many do, that the Arabs are Semites too, sons of Abraham, just like Jimmy Carter thought, whose first book on the Middle East was called The Blood of Abraham, in which he, of course, found moral equality between Ishmael and Isaac, and was just greedy of the Jews not to share Palestine with the Palestinians, as he calls them. No, they're not, Jimmy, they're not Semites, and because the Arabs descend from Hagar, not from Sarah, they are the way they are. Actually, today, I think, there is a drop in murder attempts. The security forces may be having their effect. But what still motivates these would-be Jew killers is the murderous envy of us Jews. What is Islam, after all, if not a bitter protest against Judaism for having stolen Ishmael's birthright as the firstborn son, without, of course, understanding there was a reason for his being disinherited? It was because of his character, his behavior. And that was far more important than his blood. Jimmy Carter, by that book's very title, exposed his archaic Christian fixation on blood that Jews do not share. Yes, the firstborn son is special. That's human nature. And Judaism takes it into account, but repeatedly in the lives of the patriarchs, again and again, it's the second son who bears the legacy of the father and transmits his faith and his religion. The first of these cases being Ishmael himself, who, though the firstborn, did not merit to inherit the teaching of Abraham, his father. There is, to this very day, a flavor of bitter envy on the part of these Arabs. Their bitterness that we Jews are so far ahead of them, and so all they can do is claim the Temple Mount to be their property, because they are the real Jews. They have the special covenant now. Islam is the truest and final form of Abraham's monotheism, they say. And never mind the cosmic contradiction between Abraham, known to Jews as the kindest man in the world in his generation, and the grim and gruesome, gory and horrific behavior of these savages who spring at Jews with knives in hand, who slash them and murder them. Abraham, as he really would not approve. It is interesting, though, how in their own minds the Arabs wind up mimicking the Christians, who, just like them, can be irritated, shall we say, that the Jews had or have had this special relationship with God, which makes them greedy Jews who won't share the special covenant. The Roman Catholic Church claims outright to be the real Israel. Just like the Muslims, the Roman Catholics claim they are the rightful owners of this special covenant. Once had a sneaky, dissembling Mormon missionary tell me that the Mormons were ingrafted into the Jewish people. I've heard that term before from other non-Mormon missionaries. Ingrafted. They seem not to think that the Jews have any say in the matter. You know, we do have an historical conversion process if you want to ingraft yourself, but just proclaiming it is not Jewish legislation. Everybody wants to get into the act, and above all, these Muslims who are cosmically shameless in their conscienceless belief in their right just to take what we have. That's what this latest Temple Mount violence is all about. The Arabs overran Jerusalem in the year 638, after a decade and more of a knockdown, drag-out war between the Zoroastrian Persian Empire and the Byzantine Christian Empire that bankrupted and exhausted both empires, allowing into the political vacuum the Arab hordes to swarm in and overrun Jerusalem. These Arabs have an appetite for what others have produced, and then invent a story to justify taking it from them, which commonly consists of saying the property was originally theirs, and it was stolen from them, and they're returning it to its original owners. I think Bibi is right to go along with this deal about the cameras on the Temple Mount. Though I'm fearful our well-intentioned Temple Mount activists will still rebel and become a problem, and I think that is playing with fire. Mount activists are mistaken to think the enemy denying us the right to our temple is just these locals, when it's not. It's the entirety of Islam, with its 56 states and billion-plus adherents. Not a good idea to provoke that community into taking action against us. So we ended the first segment with concern for the potentially huge Islamic menace, which may be the center ring in the three-ring circus of our lives. But it's not the only menace. On Ynet.com on Friday, Idiot's long-term military correspondent, Alex Fishman, reported that Fatah is on the verge of an eruption. They have thousands of weapons, assault rifles mostly, and their Tanzim organization, their youth wing, is itching to attack us with these weapons. The Knife Boys and Girls are clearly this decade's version of the suicide bombers of Intifada No. 2. They reckon on having a very good chance when they strike of ending their own lives with the knives. But Fatah remains a different kettle of fish, or should I say piranha. Fatah has always preferred assault rifles, RPGs, bombs, remote control bombs, versus these Islamist brothers who prefer the tactile pleasure of knifing Jews and seeing and feeling the warm blood that spurts out at them. And as far as I could figure out what Fishman was describing in the headline, Fatah on the verge of eruption was really the normal generational dynamic in Arabia in which 16 and 17-year-olds want to kill people. It is commonly misunderstood as a rebellion over ideology between the conservative older generation in power and the more radical youth. Yeah, it's just youth wanting to dispossess the ruling Pasha and his clique. Of course, the rebels spout idealistic claims of injustice and corruption by the leadership. Abu Mazen is much too accommodating to al-Yahud, they will say, when there's nothing more normal than an Arab government, fearful not of neighboring peoples, but its own people. All the Arab states have not one but two armies. The first is meant to defend the country from foreign enemies. The other army defends the ruling clique from the national army. In Arab lands, you see, just like in Israel, soldiers in uniform in city streets, in battle dress, armed. Only in Israel, they protect you, the people, from the alien enemy. In Arab lands, they protect the regime from their own people. And it's about time now for the current cohort of Ishmael clones here, the same age as Ishmael, 16, 17, when expelled from his father's community of hundreds of disciples, to erupt again. Think of how dangerous Ishmael must have been to be expelled like that. Abraham, we know, was childless all his adult life, and all he asked for Hashem was a son. And Ishmael was the result. As Hashem needed two tries, let's call it that way, to get it right with the world. First time didn't work out, and he had to drown the entire planet, start all over. So Abraham's first son was a huge disappointment. A dangerous disappointment. Avraham was the kindest man in the world who wanted a son all his life, and what he gets is this potential murderer who must be expelled like Cain, the wanderer. The Arabs throughout history have wandered as nomads. So what Fishman was describing was a population cohort of Fatah youth, the Tanzim, which means organization, and it's short for youth organization. And they're itching for some action, and it's possible we might have a replay of the last Intifada in which the IDF had to retake and subdue Judea and Samaria. This is what may be in the cards, a real mini-war in which casualties could be high, and much worse now because they're better armed now. Not a pleasing prospect. Fishman reported that in the Shuafat Unwa slum in North Jerusalem, there may be as many as 3,000 weapons, M16s, AK-47s, grenades, IEDs. The IDF took Judea and Samaria in 1967, basically without a shot, since the Jordanian army abandoned its posts and retreated back across the river. This is accepting Jerusalem, of course. we had to take it back in 2002. And who knows, like getting a booster shot, we may have to conquer it a third time, only at a fearful price. The upside this time, though, however, is the exposure of the Arabs' PR campaign, which matches nicely Hillary Clinton's testimony before the House Committee on Benghazi the other day. Lies, lies, and more lies. The PA here, the moderates, who are so different from those incorrigible Islamists, That was the theoretical basis of the Oslo Madness. You could trust them. They're putting out the claim that all these boys shot down are just were just minding their own business. And the knives found at the scene were planted by the Israeli IDF or the police. There was that Arab report on CNN, the Arab reporter, reporting the fantasy that Israel just killed boys for no reason, even as his producer had on the split screen the boy in Piscot Zahav running at police with a knife. Congress, I think, has just held back $80 million from the PA because of these lies, and I'm waiting for the Israeli government, in vain, of course, to link this latest explosion of lying by the PA these last weeks with the overall lie of Palestinian nationalism. Same mental dynamic at work. They lie about what's going on here now. They lie about history. Of course, Israel will not do that, at least wise under Bibi. He remains what he was educated to be, a non-religious person who likewise prefers to frame the violence here as a political and not a religious problem. Versus an alternate strategy, which might be to adopt the role of the prophet Yeshayahu Isaiah. Israel, he said, should be a light to the nations. And in this case, that might be trying to educate and civilize our barbaric cousins, these Arabs. What Israel needs, I mentioned before, is an Arabic-speaking prime minister who would conduct weekly classes on the internet, educating these people, civilizing them, pointing out the absolute superiority of Judeo-Christian civilization over theirs. Sort of like a Tokyo Rose doing propaganda to persuade U.S. forces to lose heart in their war against Japan, the prime minister might lecture our neighbors as to the superiority of Western culture, how superior democratic self-government is to their dictatorship, and if they want to enjoy living in a better society, the first step is to respect the right of others to believe what they want, and in general, to swear off murdering people all the time. שזופת שמש לחוצת פטרוסים מרודי התנובב מטללי רסיסים האל העונה בעת רצון עמוסים מגנו לכל החוסים שזופת שמש לחוצת פטרוסים מרודי התנובב מטללי רסיסים האל העונה בעת רצון עמוסים מגנו לכל החוסים שלח רוחך הטוב להחיות גביינו לקדמותה תשיב נחלה צביינו ממך טוב לכל יימץ פריינו הלא אתה תשוב תשוב תחיינו מזון לכולם שנתנו תיאתר באב מלכוש ותושלם והשמיים ייתנו תלם ראה כמה למלות ורסיסי ברכה לחם לאוכל ומרפא וארוחה היות הוגדת נסוכה ככוכבים בהילה להחיות גביינו לקדמותה תשיב נחלה צביינו ממך טוב לכל יימץ פריינו הלא You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Maybe you saw the op-ed piece in the Washington Post on Friday by two American academics, presumably of Jewish extraction, who for sure do not live Jewish lives. One, Steve Levitsky, a professor of government at Harvard, and Glenn Whale, professor of economics at the University of Chicago, whose first sentence was, "We are lifelong Zionists." And you knew right away these people were liars in a class with Hillary Clinton. Lifelong Zionists don't make their lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts, or Hyde Park in Chicago. They move to Israel. So here the first sentence was already a lie. Next sentence, like other progressive Jews, oh boy, and you just know, you're being forewarned that these two don't know what it means to be a Jew. There's no adjective necessary. There's just Jewishness. It's not reform. It's not progressive. It's not left-wing. It's not liberal. It's not Reconstructionist Judaism, conservative Judaism. It needs no modifiers. It's no such thing as progressive Jew, which connotes constant change when, on the contrary, classical Jewishness is the exercise of the most conservative ideology in the history of the human race. Judaism claims that the wisdom and the statutes found in the five books of Moses are to be preserved and lived by, conserved for all time, and they're over 3,000 years old. That's really conservative. These two Jewish ignoramuses then go on to claim that a lesson of the Holocaust is to embrace universal human rights. To which I say, what? The Holocaust was about just the opposite, the denial of human rights to one special people. Or mostly, whom tens of millions of people in Europe and North Africa and the Middle East wanted to exterminate, like diseased cattle. Nothing universal about that. These two self-declared lifelong Zionists, who never made Aliyah, want to protest, quote, the undemocratic measures undertaken in pursuit of Israel's survival, such as the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza and the denial of basic rights to the Palestinians living there. Dear me, they object to the undemocratic measures undertaken in pursuit of Israel's survival. In other words, democratic measures are more important than Israel's survival. I guess these two never heard of the undemocratic occupation of Germany and Japan for decades after World War II, in which American and Allied martial law trumped democratic self-rule, a situation which resulted from the aggression against civilization by Germany and Japan. We're in a similar situation, seen from another angle, the true Zionist angle. Israel is not in occupation according to settled international law. It does not, the situation, fit the criteria. They express their dismay at the apartheid-like regime, and never mind the anti-apartheid Jews in South Africa who battled that system before making Aliyah, who live here now, say, there's no comparison, none whatsoever. Worse, I say, this is classical anti-Semitism by definition. Accusing Israel of apartheid is an Orwellian corruption of language. Apartheid was about skin color. People were divided between whites, blacks, and mixed coloreds. When our relationship to the Arabs, to these Muslims, has absolutely nothing to do with their appearance. And to accuse Israelis of apartheid is therefore classical anti-Semitism, because it's a lie. Here were these two self-proclaimed Zionists accusing the Zionist state of color discrimination when there's no truth to that. Here were these two PhDs in elite American universities spewing anti-Semitism, with the ironic touch that both would probably call themselves Jews. What a world. What a wacky, twisted, perverted world we live in.
הראשון יש לומר להם כמה יפים הם, כמה יפים הם שהם קמים לומר להם יפה הוא העולם, יפה הוא העולם, יפה הוא העולם, יפה הוא העולם. אני משתוקק לראות את היום שילדים קמים בבוקר וההורים שלהם לא יכולים להפסיק נשק אותם ולחבק אותם ולומר להם כמה יפים הם וכמה גדולה הזכות להיות ההורים שלהם, ההורים שלהם. כשילדים הולכים לישון יש לומר להם כמה יפים הם, כמה יפים
Lastly, here's another letter to the Jerusalem Post I sent out today, but I doubt Lawrence Rifkin, the letter's editor, will publish it. Sometimes he does, many times he does not publish what I send. It refers to the J Post piece on Avi Dichter on October 23, that was last Friday, about reviving his bill on national identity. Quote, M.K. Avi Dichter is right, this is me, to declare, this is a battle for the country's image and national identity. And I say, as in any war, one targets not only the enemy's men and materiel, but his morale and his national identity. Dichter's proposed legislation is therefore only half the battle. Israel must also target the national identity of the enemy, which every honest supporter of Israel knows to be an anti-Semitic hoax. Israel must accept that Golda Meir was right, if politically incorrect, on 17 June 1969 in a London Sunday Times interview to say that, quote, there was no such thing as Palestinians. Israel must strengthen its own national identity and combat the enemy's narrative by exposing his claim to a statehood in Judea and Samaria as bogus. After all, the essence of anti-Israel propaganda these days is the Zionists stole Palestine from the Palestinians, which requires Golda's response, quote, there were no Palestinians, and I would add, when we brought our country back to life, and we didn't steal anything. Lala Tov, Meretz Yisrael.